right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we got a packed agenda today. So I'm going to run through real quick what it's going to be so you know that you're going to stick around, right? At the back end of the show, we're going to be talking with filmmaker David Zeiger about, he's one of the signatories on an ad that appeared in the New York Times and a call, the call which is what we're going to be talking about today. No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And this is an extremely important movement, folks, and I have been really, people know I've been covering it for the last couple of weeks, and I'm going to continue covering it because it is something on which rides a lot of the hopes and actually the survival of humanity to a certain extent, even that far, yes. And I'm going to read something that sort of characterizes this. It's something that's really struck me time and time again as I read it, and I'll just take a couple seconds to read it, all right, because in the middle of the show, we are going to be talking with a scientist, Milton Sayer, who's one of the signers of the statement that appeared in the New York Times. And then opening the show up, we're going to be talking with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party. And we're going to be talking with Carl as he is also one of the initiators of this whole project. And we'll be talking with him very soon in a couple minutes. But let me start with this. Imagine if people in the tens of millions filled the streets powerfully declaring that this regime, the Trump regime, is illegitimate, and demanding that it not be allowed to rule. The whole political landscape would be dramatically transformed. Every faction within the established power structure would be forced to respond. And all this could well lead to a situation in which this fascist regime is actually prevented from ruling. This is not some idle dream, but something which could be made reality if all those who hate what is represented by this fascist regime translate their outrage into firm determination and massive mobilization to create the conditions which make this possible. And this is coming from the folks who are bringing you this whole campaign, which is Refuse Fascism, refusefascism.org, all right? Definitely check that out and judge for yourself on this whole question. But joining us to talk about this right now, as I mentioned earlier, is Carl Dix. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, Michael.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you on, man. You've been doing some business out there these days, man.
Yes, we have.
And on Wednesday, January 4th, there was a powerful full-page ad that appeared in the New York Times saying, "No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America," signed by more than 2,000 people and featuring a number of people, very prominent people in the society. Let's talk about the significance of this.
Well, it's very important because it's an announcement to the world that there is a diverse array of people, including some well-known voices of conscience in society, who are coming together to say that this regime that's scheduled to be put in place 2 weeks from today is a fascist regime, and that we refuse to accept it, and that we call on the millions and millions of people who hate what Donald Trump represents to join us in acting to stop this regime before it gets started. And it was a real blast out there because there's the hundreds of thousands of times New York Times readers. But then there are people who heard about it through news stories that were written, through other media opportunities, including the one that Cornel West and I did on Bill O'Reilly's show last night, and through it being pushed out on social media. So a whole lot of people got this announcement. And this is one part of what we need to do. And the other part of what we need to do is to begin to mobilize resistance on the ground that can roll up to the week before the inauguration, really impact D.C. and call on others to join us, come to D.C. if they can, if they can't make it to D.C., to act where they are, and to, through our actions, call out to all of the people who are really, like, anguished about what Donald Trump will mean for humanity.
Mm-hmm. Carl, we're
in despair that there's nothing that could be done about it, and we want to reach to them and say there is something that could be done about it, and we need to do it ourselves.
Definitely. And I'm going to talk with you more about that towards the end of the interview, but there's a couple of things I wanted to get into. You mentioned the O'Reilly contact. that was a very interesting program last night in terms of really how sharply this thing is being fought out on a lot of levels. And the big issue there was, you know, it seemed to be one of the big issues is O'Reilly's constant attempt to normalize Trump. He kept saying, "Come on, he's not really a fascist. You can't say that. He just played one in the election. But now we don't really know what he's going to do. So give him a chance." And you had a problem with that. Let's talk about that particular thing, because that's not an uncommon argument that's being made from that set of people who are actually, well, I'm really not Trump, but you have this guy who is pretty much a, let put it this way, is pretty much well associated with the fascist community, okay? And he,
yes.
So let's just leave it with that. But let's talk about that.
Yeah, because see, this view that, well, he took some stances in the election, but now let's see what he's really going to do, is a very dangerous view. Dangerous because it ignores that he consistently put forward a fascist agenda. I mean, a Muslim registry, building a wall on the border with Mexico, looking at the record number of deportations that Obama carried out and saying, that's not nearly enough. I'm going to deport many more people than that. You know, bragging about sexual assault, calling for law and order, which is code word for clamping down even more viciously on black people. And above that, there is the way in which he made real clear, I'm going to rule. The way in which journalists who covered him critically were then targeted by a lynch mob through social media, but beyond social media. Two journalists have reported that they had to get private security to deal with the avalanche of death threats that they got. He threatened to jail his opponent in the election. He talked about, well, people who burn the flag, which is protected political speech based on a Supreme Court decision, should not only be jailed, but their citizenship should be taken away. And see, what comes together here is that he put out a horrific agenda which will take all of the attacks that this system brings down on people and put them on steroids. That's how ramped up they're going to be. And he is aiming to suffocate the space there is in society today to resist these injustices. So people who are saying, let's wait and see, are like playing a dangerous game, because the time to fight a fascist regime is not after it gets in power and reveals its true aim. That was done in Germany with Hitler. He had laid out his program. People had said, well, he won't be able to do that. He won't be able to keep it together. He'll fail, and we'll take over power next. And they even had a slogan for it, Nach Hitler uns, which is German for after Hitler us. And what actually happened is Hitler got in power, began to carry out his fascist program, including crushing his opponents. That's the point of Niebuhr's famous quotation, first they came for the communist and I didn't resist because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionist and I didn't resist because I wasn't a trade unionist. He was targeting his major opponents, and we'll get a similar... This is what we'll get from Trump. And when people show you who they are, and he has shown us who he is, not just through his campaign, but in a concentrated way through his campaign. But look, I'm from New York. I remember the full-page ad he put out calling for the reimposition of the death penalty so that the Central Park Five could be executed for the crimes that they had been charged and convicted for. Whipping up a lynch mob atmosphere around that case. Then it comes out something that I had been arguing all along, that these young men had been framed after they had served long time in prison. This was revealed. This was brought to light, and they were released. And he is still saying that they should be in jail. They must have done something wrong. This is this man. This is what he's been true to. Not only the racism, the woman hating, and all the rest, but his view that he knows what's best and that the way to carry this out is through coming down on people who stand against him. This kind of regime is one that if you give it a chance to see what it's going to do, it is going to make it immeasurably more difficult to resist it, to fight against it. That's why it's important to act now to stop it before it gets started. And see, the other side of this is there is a basis to do this. There is a basis to bring forward the kind of resistance.
I'm going to ask you about that in a...
with other factors. Yeah, I know.
Okay. All right, I just wanted to make sure, because there's a couple of things in, okay, off of what you're saying that actually have been really pressing in terms of when I've spoken to people and from when I've talked to other people about their conversations with people. An argument that comes out constantly is that you're kind of making too much of this fascism threat. You know, one of the ways it comes out, it says, look, black and brown people have been living under fascism or some form of it for as long as they've been in this country. You know, and that the only difference now is that some white people are going to be feeling it and seeing what's going on. So don't tell us about fascism. This is not a key struggle for us. What do you say to that?
Well, it misses the actual reality because, yes, black people have suffered savage oppression since the first African was dragged to these shores in slave chains. That is real. But that misses two things. One is that what will a Trump administration mean for black people? What does it mean when he talks about we have to have law and order? He is saying the police have to have even more power than they have now. They need to be further unleashed. The criminal injustice system with its prisons and mass incarceration and roundups and deportation of immigrants, all of that needs to be ramped up. And that's going to mean for black people, for Latinos, and others, other oppressed nationalities, that they are going to be even more targeted. And some of the ability to go through the courts to try to mitigate some of this, this is something that's going to be closed down. I mean, look at who is being proposed for Attorney General. Jeff Sessions, a man who has said that the NAACP and the ACLU are un-American organizations. A man who thought the Ku Klux Klan was a fine group until he found out that some of its members smoked pot. And then he was kind of down on them, too. So in other words, their lynching of black people, their targeting of other minorities, that was okay with him, but he just didn't like the fact that they smoked pot. This is the regime that's coming in. It will mean that the horrors that black people have suffered will be intensified greatly. And then here's the other thing. You've been through this. Why do you want to continue going through it? And why do you want to see it inflicted on other people? The best of the black movement for justice and against the oppression that black people have suffered has always been to reach out to and stand with others who are under attack. Not to say, go hit somebody else like you've been hitting me. Let them see how it feels. The point is, let's come together and let's stop this coming down on everybody. And that's the response that I gave when some comedians started this, when other people started talking about, well, we've already been through savage oppression. Let's now some other people going to get a chance to experience it. No, I want to see it ended and ended on everybody. And that's why people need to take this for the seriousness that it has and act to stop it and bring together everybody possible to act to stop it.
You know, Carl, well, let me first say you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party and one of the initiators of No, In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept the Fascist America. And he's also a signatory on the recent ad that appeared in the New York Times and was on with Cornel West, was on Bill O'Reilly Thursday night. And Carl, one of the things that, when, as you're talking about this, and again, in terms of some of the conversations I've had with people, there's also been an argument where some people have stepped back and said, okay, look, we've been dealt a bad hand. Now, we should fight what comes down as best as we can, but we also need to look at making this like a one-term presidency. You know, that we got to fight for what we can get and what we can preserve now, but really be looking at, it's a time to reorganize, it's a time to step back, it's a time to try and figure out how the hell are we going to bust through on this. And that actually, to me, that seems to present a very big problem. Like, hello, fascism is here and it's growing, you know?
Yeah, because see, it's taking the approach that this isn't really going to be any different. Yeah, it's going to be bad, but not really different. But then when you look at what is actually being put forward here, the talk about pressing dissent, reporters who critically cover Trump, and there weren't that many mainstream journalists who were critically covering them. But even where some of that was done, people were targeted and a lynch mob atmosphere was created around them. You know, he'd whip up people at rallies to physically attack protesters. He threatened to jail his opponent. And see, one thing that the Republican Party has been doing, which there will also be an attempt to ramp up, is disenfranchisement. You know, so people who are saying we're going to point towards the next election are saying we're going to cede to this fascist regime the ability to work to rig the next elections while we look to it to try to come back and deal with it. And it's really missing what the nature of fascism is and what the actual challenge is. Because if you begin to accept this regime as legitimate, you begin to more and more accept aspects of it as normal, and then you say you're going to fight it later, what actually ends up happening is that that which you didn't like but failed to resist becomes something that you later come to accept or are forced to accept. This is what this comes down to. The time to stand up and fight it is now. That's important because that gives us a chance to stop it, but it's also important because that's the way you create the best basis to carry the fight forward. Now, I'm really focused on let's stop this because it is possible to do that. There is the basis in the anguish, the despair and outrage that millions and millions and tens of millions of people feel about Trump. And rather than waiting till later, yes, I will be out here fighting no matter what happens, whether this regime gets its hands on power or not. I'm going to continue the fight. I ain't giving up, and I'm going to be calling on others not to give up. But I'm also calling on people not to cede to them that this regime will be able to take the reins of power and to fight it now, because there is a possibility of stopping it before it gets started. And we really need to seize that possibility and act on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, this is the big question for a lot of people, too, right now, is that, OK, you're talking about stopping this regime before it even begins, as you just said. And that and you're talking the way you're talking about doing this is involving millions and then tens of millions organized by those millions so that you have tens of millions of people in the streets, both in D.C., around the country. You have this kind of movement that's sort of all going to come together, and you got it coming together in, what is it, 13 days now. And people are really, a lot of people were asking, I know they've asked me straight up, how the hell do you think you're going to do that? You know, it's like, and what's the basis for that? And really, I, you know, people are really trying to figure out how can you bring those tens of millions of people and what's needed to stop this regime? How are you going to do that?
Okay, this is a very big question, and I'm going to speak to it in a concentrated way, but I also want to refer people to the website refusefascism.org, because there you'll not only find the call, the video of me and Cornell on Bill O'Reilly's show, and the plan for doing this, you will also be finding what we are doing as things get put in place, as things happen, but as they get planned, they'll be on that website. And it does come down to, look, there are tens of millions of people who are anguished, outraged, and fearful about what this regime will mean. The people who took to the streets right after the election, the people who were in tears upon hearing how the election came out. Those people don't want to see this happen. And Refuse Fascism is calling out to them to join us in acting to stop it. It's going to, a big nodal point is going to be the Martin Luther King holiday weekend. We are going to be in D.C. In fact, I'm going down to D.C. this weekend to prepare the ground for it. We're going to call people into the streets of D.C., not for a one-day protest and then to go back home, but to stay in the streets of D.C., taking the message of no Trump, no Pence, no fascist USA, into the streets, into the schools, into the office buildings, museums, hospitals, disrupting the business as usual in D.C., and through our actions, calling on others to join us in D.C., building on what begins to happen so that more and more people are flocking into D.C., more and more people are acting where they are. People in Los Angeles you're in Los Angeles, you know about this, are talking about taking the streets, I think, on the 15th and staying there. And that's what we're going to be doing in D.C. It's going to start on the 14th. This is what needs to happen. There is a basis in all of the people who are outraged by everything that comes out of Trump's mouth, you know, tweets about let's start a new nuclear arms race. This is what is being put in place. And see, this kind of resistance can connect with the sharp differences among the powers that be over Trump and what he represents, differences that they will abide by if left to their own devices. But if a political crisis is created by massive resistance, can become the basis for mechanisms being created to stop this regime, to oust it before it gets started. And I do want to take people's attention to South Korea. This doesn't get a lot of mention, but right now in South Korea, the government of the elected president, President Park, has been impeached and is now in a court case to validate or overturn that impeachment that could have President Park ousted. And the charge is corruption. And the defense of this president, her lawyer says, look, we did the kind of things that governments in South Korea normally do. You're calling this corruption, but it's the normal operation of things. See, and it is the normal operation of things, but what made it different is that people in Korea began flocking into the streets, demanding that this president, who they were charging a number of things, and actually not principally corruption, there were a number of things that had happened in Korea, including a ferry boat accident that killed 300 people, that they charged to the president. And it began with the youth and students. Then professional and associations got involved. Church congregations begin to come out and do candlelight vigils. And soon, the cities of South Korea were clogged with masses of people demanding that President Park be ousted. And that created a political crisis that they then moved to solve by actually ousting the president, because they didn't want the illegitimacy that had developed in the eyes of the people around her government becoming a view that the whole system was illegitimate. And that is what needs to happen here, and there is a basis to happen here in the way in which tens of millions of people have a felt outrage, a felt anguish, a felt fear for what a Trump regime will mean. And that's what we're calling out to and working to bring into motion. We're speaking for, but also to those people, saying, don't give in to despair. Act on your outrage. Act on your disgust. Act on your anguish. And act to prevent that which you fear and hate coming down.
Hmm. All right, Carl Dix, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. And before you go, tell people again, what's the plan, Stan, and how can they hook in?
The plan is we're calling people into the streets, beginning with the Martin Luther King weekend, January 14th and 15th in D.C. We're going to gather in D.C. on the 14th. Other cities are making their plans to have gathering spots then, not for one-day protests, but for protests that begin and go on and that build on each other and grow, calling others to join us in the streets, to get to Washington, D.C. if you can. If you can't get to D.C., take to the streets wherever you are. Be part of disrupting business as usual and creating the kind of political crisis that could force the prevention of the Trump-Pence regime from taking the reins of power. Watch the website refusefascism.org for how what's being set up, what's being planned, what's happening, and get involved.
All right, Carl, thank you very much for joining us, and I'm sure we'll be in contact as this develops, man. This is exciting. This is very exciting.
Yes, it is.
Yes. All right, Carl, okay. Thanks. Thanks a lot, man. Take care.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Take care.
Okay.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking to Carl Dix of the Revolutionary Communist Party and one of the initiators of refusefascism.org. This interview was recorded last week, so I wanted to clarify some of the timing. The New York Times ad appeared on January 4th, and Carl and Cornel West were on Bill O'Reilly's Fox News program on January 5th. And if you've been following the news, Carl Dix was among several people who disrupted the confirmation for Jeff Sessions on Tuesday, January 10th. Now, before we take a musical break, I wanted to play a clip from Refuse Fascism. It features Jeremy Scahill, Carl Dix, Andy Z, the Imam Ayub Abdul-Bati, Immortal Technique, and Sansara Taylor. and the music is by Kevin MacLeod.
When I take the oath of office next year, I will restore law and order to our country. Believe me, believe me.
It's open season on anyone who doesn't believe that this country is white and should always be white. That's the message that was sent to these people in an overt way from the podium of his candidacy, and now it's going to be from his presidential Twitter feed and from the people that he puts into power.
This regime will move to violently repress, if necessary, or intimidate any and all who dissent against it, who promote critical thinking of reality. We've seen this happen before in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, in Chile and other countries in the 1970s.
The whole filthy system is the problem, and it helped to produce a fascist that we must all, with every fiber in our body, oppose until he is no longer there.
We must become millions, and we must become millions in a matter of weeks.
This is a defining moment for this country, and this is a defining moment for us who are human beings on this planet. Whether or not we will move together concertively along a path of righteousness and brotherhood, or whether we will perish as fools.
So rise up, motherfucker, like the sign of the times. I feel my body weakening, but my spirit is fine, ready to go to war with devils at the drop of a dime and fight with my rebel army until the stars are aligned.
We are not getting used to fascism. We are getting organized to stop it.
All right, that was from RefuseFascism.org. You can contact them via email at RefuseFascism@gmail.com. Once again, that's RefuseFascism@gmail.com or info@RefuseFascism.org. Once again, that's info@RefuseFascism.org. You can also call them at 917-407-1286. Once again, that's 917-407-1286. And check the website for upcoming actions and for groups in your area. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show. Right now, we're going to take a quick musical break and listen to a little something new from Alicia Keys, and it's called Holy War. So check this out.
Is obscene. We've got it twisted in this lucid dream, baptized in boundaries, schooled in sin, divided by difference, sexuality and skin.
All right, you just got to get that album. It's called Here. It's Alicia Keys. It's a really great album, a really great song, so definitely check it out. All right, in this part of the show, I'm going to be running a conversation that I had yesterday with Milton Serra, professor of microbiology at the University of California, San Diego, and he's also one of the initiators of Refuse Fascism, and he's a signatory to the ad that appeared in the New York Times. So I want to just jump into that right away. This is Milton Serra talking about why he did what he did and why he's doing what he's doing. Joining us on the show today is one of the signatories of the No, in the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America statement and the ad that appeared in the New York Times on Wednesday. And I'm very happy to welcome to the show Milton Serra. Milton, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Well, I'm really looking forward to talking to you, man. You're a signatory on the call, as I mentioned. For people that don't know, it's calling for a movement of resistance that becomes powerful enough to stop the Trump-Pence regime from coming to power. What attracted you to this in the first place?
Well, I must say, the results of the election were, to me, a total disaster. I had been very concerned about the rise of fascism, and, of course, also concerned about Trump's sexist attitudes. He made it very clear during his campaign how he felt. And I came to realize that what he feels and what he acts upon are very similar to those which his father did. And from a psychological standpoint, I recognized, in view of his reaction to the many responses that people provided, that he was a very inflexible person. His values are the same as his father's. Having known a number of people who have some of these symptoms, I thought that he probably suffered from autism spectrum disorder. No question in my mind at that time that he was mentally unstable, that he can't take criticism. His response to criticism is violent reactions. That was one reason I was convinced that the American people would never support him for the presidency.
So that's
a beginning.
Yeah, and a rude awakening, I'm sure, when actually that happened, to the degree it did.
I'm never too sure as to what it means. We know that Hillary got 2.9 million more votes than he did, so clearly the popular vote was not represented in the Electoral College vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We also know that Republicans traditionally now, ever since Nixon, have been gerrymandering the vote by all kinds of means, and that the vote isn't really a Democratic one. This result of the election has indicated to me that democracy isn't what we would like it to be.
In my mind, actually, too, the thing of looking at Trump and what actually happened with the election and the fact that he, in fact, did not get the majority of the popular vote and that he was elected through or appointed or whatever through the process going along with the Electoral College and the rest of that, and that being something that was developed in relation to protecting slavery and the interests of the slave owners, there's a kind of a poetic justice in the sense of what he's all tied up with and what actually opened the door for him to do this. But at the same time, you know, I have to say it's been very, very both revealing for a lot of people, but also kind of draws people up short and makes them very concerned about what's going on. When you look at, like, there's been a huge sort of amount of, within the halls of government, of trying to normalize a Trump regime and trying to say this is, you know, everybody meeting him and acting like it's just another thing, you know, it's just another election. And that, to me, is a very significant thing going on.
I agree. The very fact that the American Nazi Party, the white supremacists, and the KKK were all solidly behind Trump is a very bad sign right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
There's no question in my mind that they recognized his fascist tendencies and that he had acted in accordance with those tendencies in his previous businesses and that they could rely on him.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, everything he's done since the election indicates that they were absolutely right.
Now, you're a signatory to this statement, as I was saying earlier, you're a signatory to the statement, no, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. What attracted you to that, and what made you feel like you were compelled to sign on?
Long before the statement was sculptured, I have been very concerned about fascism in America, and I feel that the election of Trump is rather similar to that of Mussolini in Italy and Hitler in Germany. And just think what heroes anyone would have been if they had successfully terminated the government of those two people. So therefore, considering that there might be a way of preventing Trump would be an incredible service to all of humanity. That was the attitude I took.
Have you seen other scientists actually taking this up or signing on to this or talking about the rise of the Trump regime and what the impact is going to be?
We had many conference calls with several of the people who also signed on, as I did, and there were a number of scientists among that group. And so, yes, I've talked with many scientists. And since then, I've emailed many of my associates and friends, and I've had reactions of all types. Some of them quite negative, saying, well, after all, Trump was elected in a democratic process, and therefore we should go along with it. So I've had that kind of a reaction, and then I've had many people who have said, yes, this is something we just can't accept. We've got to do whatever is possible to prevent it from going any further.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about some of these scientists that have signed on, it's been really, you know, refreshing to me to actually go through some of those expressions of opposition to Trump and to the regime and people calling for people to actually stand up and say, we refuse to accept this. How would you say the entire scientific community is looking at Trump these days?
Not very favorably.
Well,
after all, he is not a person who has any knowledge of science. He doesn't have an appreciation of the science, and that means, most likely, he's not going to support the sciences. It's really a typical Republican fascist approach. If you noticed, in Germany and in Italy, at the time of Mussolini and Hitler, the scientific community was just not represented. The Republican Party in general, which I now call the Fascist Party, has in general never been very supportive of science. I'm sure you know all of that. The problem is, science contradicts much of the religious belief that's common in this country. And Republicans or fascists get their appeal in part by appealing to religious people who are not based in science. Almost everything in the Old Testament is false. We know it. It's been proven scientifically. And, of course, the vast majority of Republicans prefer to believe that, to believe that the Old Testament is gospel. In other words, that it's true. It's not just mythology. But the truth is, it's a book of mythology that was created by about a dozen different people writing different sections, and then they put it together in one volume, leaving out lots of other stuff, and they've got a book. It's a book with lots of contradictions and lots of falsities, and yet people will believe it, some of them even saying it's the Word of God, every word of it has to be true. And so naturally, Republicans are not going to be in support of science.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Milton Sayre. And Milton is a professor of molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego. And we're talking about, no, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. You know, it's interesting, too, though, because there's also been a number of people who, well, on one, let's start with the sort of lower thing in pursuing this, but there's been a number of people who have seriously downplayed the threat of this regime overall in relation to the society, but also within the field of science. And I was going to ask you, what would you think the actual impact of a Trump presidency, of a Trump regime coming into power, Trump, Pence, and actually people have to remember to include Pence, because Pence is not the sort of, let's put it this way, Pence is not Spiro Agnew, and he's not the sort of chuckle nut that's going to stand up there and just like laugh at everything Trump is doing. He actually plays a role in this in terms of the fanatical Christian fundamentalist that you were just referring to. You know, so let's talk about this a little bit. There's the threat that we've been talking about in general, but there's also a threat that people face in terms of the within the field of science itself. I would think there must be a threat. What kind of science is going to be pursued? Who's going to be funded? What's going to happen with all this? What's going to be shut down? Is that happening?
Well, he's not in office yet, so it hasn't happened yet.
Do you see it happening?
I see it happening, yes. I think, as is true of almost all of the fascist members of the Republican Party, of which means almost everybody, they emphasize military. And Trump has said that, too. He wants to expand the military. Well, the military is probably the largest source of federal spending at the present time. And of course, George W., he increased it 30% military spending when it was already the highest in any country in the world. In fact, it was rated that the American military spending was more than that of the entire rest of the world, and yet he felt it necessary to increase military spending 30%. And unfortunately, under Obama, it hasn't gone back to its original state. Well, what's worse is George W. Bush has created debt, which was almost insurmountable, and he did so on the basis of lies by starting two wars. And those wars have now cost us an estimated $3 trillion. That's $3,000 billion. And it's estimated that it will cost another $1 trillion before things iron out. Worse than that, he also created instability throughout the Middle East, and that's not something that's going to ever reverse itself. Now, the problem and the reason that I mentioned this is you have a stupid president. He was, after all, a C-minus student in college. You have someone who's not aware of any of the aspects of ruling a large country like the U.S. He's not able to do so. He thinks he's able to lie his way, as they did to justify the invasion of the Iraq War, and it's cost us so much that we have not been able to afford to take care of our own people. It's just amazing to me that people who recognize the problems with George W. would support someone like Trump, who's going to put us in the same kind of jeopardy. So it's awfully serious, if you ask me.
Yeah, definitely. A couple more questions. What about people who argue that science, and therefore scientists, actually have no business interfering in politics?
Well, maybe that's true. And if it is true, what it really means is the truth has nothing to do with politics.
Good answer. You want to pursue that a little?
After all, what do scientists try to do with their lives? They try to discover new important information. We try to learn the truth. The truth is what we seek. And that can hardly be said of most people in our society. And probably many people don't realize that what we really try to do is to seek the truth. We're not there for the purpose of getting grant money, although it's nice to have it because we can do our jobs much more effectively. But in fact, we're all seeking to identify the truth. And if we don't, if, for example, we come up to the wrong conclusions, you can be sure there will be 10 scientists out there to point out the fact that we made a mistake. So in fact, the system is self-controlled. There's a feedback mechanism by which anyone who does come up with something that's not truthful is going to be essentially canned. So it's an amazing system.
You know,
it should be respected by the general public. I hope that will prove to be the case and recognize that people like Trump, who have no background in science, as he himself has said, are just not appropriate material for the presidency.
You know, it's interesting because related to what you're saying, I spoke to a scientist, I think it was last week, who was involved in the demonstration up in San Francisco at the AGU gathering in San Francisco back in early December. And they were making the point that they also thought that one of the things is that when you're a scientist, you actually don't give up your membership in humanity. You know, actually, in a lot of ways, you feel that membership more pressingly than people who might not know all the things about how the world operates, how humans operate, how all the things that inhabit the world operate, how space is operating, how all this, that you not only you don't give up your being a human and you know, you're involved in all this, but you also have a certain responsibility to go out and bring this to people, which I think is something that's really important in looking at the role of scientists in the world today. And one of the things, really, I think, is why a regime like the Trump regime might like want to shut that down or nip that in the bud kind of thing.
Well, I think that's true. Just look at what happened in Hitler's or Mussolini's regimes. They shut down science, and the consequence was they could say anything and get away with it. And Trump, of course, has already shown that he's a liar who pushes his own agenda and does not take the majority of people into account. It'll be interesting. I've had associates who have said, well, don't worry about Trump. He's going to be impeached within 2 years. I don't know if it's true, and I kind of doubt it. But I think that Trump is a truth threat, not just to science and the truth, but to the world. I happen to teach environment, and with respect to environmental issues, Trump is just not the man. He doesn't respect the environment. He's not so stupid as to say that it's all a hoax, but he's willing to say, well, it's not nearly as important as employment. And unfortunately, when you think long terms, the environment is extremely important, far more important than the momentary economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I have one thing I wanted to bring to your attention. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but it's a thing called it's done by this group of scientists, and they put out a call. And the scientists are the Center for Biological Diversity. They put out a newsletter each week, and they basically put out a call, said, lash out at the darkness and fight like hell. And they said, normally we put out our newspaper every week, but not today. We're only thinking about one thing right now, stopping Donald Trump from destroying the planet. And they said, there's no way in hell we're going to allow that to happen. Like everyone, we woke up after the election in an ugly, depressed place. As individuals, we cried, we mourned, we sat in a stunned disbelief about what had happened to our country. We felt the impulse to stay home alone. But then we came to work and began the fight. And we're warriors. It's what we do. We know what we're up against, and we're going to keep on doing this. And I thought that was an interesting and very moving point in there. And then they'd say, we know what it's going to take to win. The movement that stands for what's right, that's our movement, and for our environment, for our wild animals and plants and places and vulnerable people who've been preyed upon for far too long. And that's going to grow stronger every day, every hour. Thousands will become millions. Millions will become tens of millions. That's what it's going to take to win. And we will win. And I thought that was a very, very interesting
commentary. Very strong statement.
Yeah.
We'll see if it happens.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Trump is very strong, too.
Well, you know, it's a...
He has all the power, and there are no checks and balances. Trump can do what he wants. The Republican Party, that is, the American Fascist Party, will support him.
Which lends more power to the call of this whole movement. This the call.
I appreciate that, and I'm totally for it. I mean, I think there should be everyone who recognizes the problem should be resisting. And if that happens, and it really makes an effect, I think it would be really wonderful.
Definitely. All right, Milton, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Bye now. All right, you've been listening to a conversation I had with Milton Serra, professor of microbiology at the University of California, San Diego, and one of the signatories and initiators of No, in the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America. And also go to refusefascism.org to find out more about the whole thing. All right, we're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
A horse, of course, but who rides is important. Sitting high with a uniform, barking orders, the man of order. And I'm scared that I talk too much about what I...
All right, welcome back. I'd love to play more, but we can't. And that is a report to the shareholders from Run the Jewels, all right? And the album is Run the Jewels 3, okay? So check that out, all right? And a report to the shareholders. We'll play more next week, probably. Right now, I'm very pleased to be welcoming back to the show. He's been here a number of times, although he always sneaks out the door without... leaving a tip. anyway.
Seabiscuit in the fifth at Santa Anita.
Joining us now is David Zeiger. David's a filmmaker. He's a documentary filmmaker, and he's actually very well known for his serious TV series, Senior Year, and for his film. Actually, the one film that I think really stands out in a lot of people's minds is...
Sir, No Sir.
Right, yeah, which is a really remarkable film. And you also did the film... This Is Where We Take Our Stand, which was also another very important film, bringing things out that hadn't been brought out before. Now, you're one of the initiators of this whole campaign we've been talking about. No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
Right.
What brought you into this, man?
Trump. this has been a horror show, and people everywhere who have any sense of humanity have seen it as a horror show right from the start. And I think there's a lot of shock going on right now that things have gotten to the point where they did. There was a lot of disbelief that this guy could possibly, you know, become the president. That there was disbelief that even that he wanted to become president. I know Michael Moore wrote a piece early on, said, well, he doesn't really want to become, you know, it's all a publicity stunt for his TV show. But this has become what began as farce is now tragedy. And it has to be stopped. It has to be stopped.
Your thoughts when you say it has to be stopped. What are your thoughts on what a Trump regime would mean?
Well, I was thinking about this. I think it's not just a matter of his positions and his views on things. Those views are what's happened here, I believe, is the culmination of 30 plus years of a growing and developing extreme right movement in this country that has taken step. And with Trump as president, basically, they've, at least in their minds and in the official lexicon, they have won. They are now on top. I remember the first time I ever saw an anti-abortion demonstration was in 1988, and that was actually the first anti-abortion demonstration was at the Atlanta Convention. And suddenly this Operation Rescue people showed up. It was weird. It was a farce. It was bizarre. And now these people, through Trump, are in charge, or they're on the verge of becoming in charge. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is in terms of the world, ever since 2001, ever since the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, the United States, our country, our government, whatever, has thrown the world into chaos, has created the worst refugee crisis in the history of the world, has created massive destruction, massive misery throughout the Middle East, created a situation that is more unstable all the time. And Trump and his approach and his policies is essentially very similar to Hitler's policies in the whole movement to you know, make Germany great again, to resolve the conflicts that were in the minds of the Nazis that were keeping Germany down. through major efforts. And in the world today, those are catastrophic. They're absolutely catastrophic. And it's the things that Trump has said he wants to do. We have to take that seriously. We have to take that as real, because he's not joking. And we have to do everything possible to stop it.
You know, it's heavy. And just one passing thought is, like, you know, when you were talking about this thing of Trump, he's a fascist. It's a fascist regime. He's a fascist. You also have that combination, a very deadly combination of the fascist and the Christian fascist, because we got to remember Pence is in there, and he's not just a chucklehead. He's in there for a reason. And the thing is that I want to really make sure we get into this next question, though, because you and I are from a generation, a different generation than some of the people that are listening today. And some of our listeners, many of our listeners are part of from that same generation. But people tend to forget. That was a time when the idea of revolution was in the air, a time when not many of us thought, not only thought this should happen, but it could as well. And these are different times today. But what made you think that it's necessary and possible to get into this?
Well, one thing about the 60s that I think gets forgotten is that two presidents were driven from office largely, principally by the movement. Lyndon Johnson had reached a point when Lyndon Johnson bowed out of running for a second term. A lot of the reason was he could not step out of the White House without being pummeled by thousands and thousands of demonstrators. I was at Century City in 1967 when Johnson came to speak, and there were thousands of people in the streets, and it became a pitched battle with police that went on into the night. He couldn't go anywhere because the war, it's not that it was unpopular, it's that it was criminal, and it was being called out as criminal by students, by black people, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee at that point, even Martin Luther King at a certain point. I mean, this became untenable, and he had to step down. Nixon, there had been attempts to impeach Nixon right from the beginning, even though he had won the popular vote. In fact, when Nixon ran for his second term against McGovern, he had one of the largest margins in history. There was a huge base of people out there that were very pro-Nixon. But the reality was his repressive measures, the things that he was doing to clamp down and to oppress students and black people through the Black Panther Party, all of these things, and his continuation and expansion of the war in Vietnam caused a very sharp division in the ruling class of the country and in the government. There were attempts to impeach him right from the beginning. And as soon as Watergate happened, that gave the opening that caused the flood that drove not only Nixon, first Agnew out for corruption, which was something that he would not have been driven out for if it hadn't been the fact that there were other things that he stood for. And then Nixon for Watergate. So this is not, it's whether or not the inauguration is prevented. The movement to do that has to happen now because it has to build and grow and not in any way, shape, or form accommodate. And I just want to say one thing about this. Pretty much all of my friends were Bernie supporters during the election. I had a lot of arguments about the election and all of that. And that's another question. But the fact is, where are the Bernie supporters? I mean, right now, you know, they talk about millions of people, you know, wanted Bernie in there. Millions of people wanted some form of revolution. And we can argue about what that was or what that is. Those people have to be out in the streets. Those people cannot. I mean, frankly, what Bernie's saying now is, well, you know, 2 years, we'll get congressmen in there. Well, you know, that's a deadly approach. And I heard what Carl was saying. I think he's absolutely right. People got to get out in the streets. People have to realize that this is not business as usual, what's happening in the country right now. And I know right now there's more shock and fear than there is a determination or even a path to do that, but that has to change. And that's a lot. That's why I'm part of this.
Mm-hmm. I want to remind listeners that this is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm Michael Slate. And I'm talking today with filmmaker David Zeiger, the director of Cyrano, Sir, among many other films, and one of the initiators of No, In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept the Fascist America. You know, it's interesting to me, too, because there is a call that's been put out from a number of people about speaking out directly to people from our generation. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, look, what we did back then was absolutely right, and it's even more right to do similar things like that now. And I've seen that call in a number of places. You know, and I was thinking about this because when people talk about it looks like everything is so solid, everything is so, you know, there's a block of America and what it is, American imperialism and what it is. But there's actually, when you think about what happened in the 60s, as you were saying, Nixon got elected by a landslide, mm-hmm. got reelected by a landslide. It was happy days are here again, all this kind of stuff going on. And just, 2 years later? But you had, it wasn't 2 years later, it wasn't magic, because you look at the things that you were pointing to, the stuff that was going on in the streets, the stuff that was going on in the campuses, the stuff that was going on among black people in the society, and this question of the war, where actually, I remember when we were dealing, when I should say I helped, I didn't help, I did some work with David on Cerno, sir. And one of the things that we were talking about back then, I remember, was the fact that the first time in the history of this country, you had the military collapse, basically. They had mm-hmm. to issue this statement. There was that message that came from the Pentagon to somebody and said, we can no longer field a reliable army. These kinds of forces that are roiling and boiling beneath the surface oftentimes lead to things that are totally unexpected. And I think that's actually something that people got to look at and think about today as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to talk about that. And it's not exactly the same. I mean, obviously, things are much different now.
Right.
And in many ways, I think the stakes are a lot higher. And that's maybe partly why I include myself in this. There's a lot of fear. You know, there's a lot of fear about what's going to happen. But that fear has to be turned into action. And by the way, I mean, it's the 60s were largely a youth movement, but there was a strong arm of support in the older generation. That was extremely significant, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's important to remember.
Absolutely. All right, David Zagar, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And we're going to haul you back in here as this thing goes along, too. So there.
All right.
Let me remind you that we've been talking with David Zagar, David, the documentary filmmaker, whose works include the series Senior Year and the film Cerno, Sir, and This Is Where We Take Our Stand. Remember, this whole campaign is no. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And you can get in touch with people there. Refusefascism.org is where you got to go, or hashtag NoFascistUSA. All right, so check all of that out. And I want to thank all of my guests today. I want to thank Carl Dix, Milton Sayre, and David Zagar. I also want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and my board op today, the always wonderful and amazingly talented Kiana Williams. Yeah! There you go. All right. And I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. And we'll be back again next week. All right. If you want to write to me, you can. mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with Once They Banned Imagine from Drive-By Truckers. All right. So check this out.
All the way back where ghosts from the past were still fighting their wars from the grave. Complete with record burning, threatening and spurning the crime of getting blood on the page. Since the big one ended, we'd been mostly pretending we'd have had the same gumption and grit as the greatest among us. When harm came upon us, we wouldn't hesitate to defend. But with or against, something's been out to get us, and it looked like something finally did. No nobler cause in our lifetime for